Today's episode of She Brew in the City is brought to you by Top Dog Tours. Whether you're in Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston, or New York City, we have something for everybody. Visit us at topdogtours.com to book your tour today. This is She Brew in the City, and I'm Nicole Kelly, and today we are talking with Jenna Liu, who is one of the founders of a really cool organization. I guess, would it be a company or organization? Would you call that? I don't know.
We're a company.
Company.
We're an LLC.
called Six Cool Moms. So how are you today, Jenna?
I'm good. Did you hear that in the background? Those are actually my guinea pigs.
Oh.
You guys, you're rude. I'm good. How are you?
I'm going pretty good. Pretty good. So I always like to start off by asking my guests about their Jewish upbringing. How religious were you? What denomination were you raised in, if any? Did you have a bat mitzvah? What was kind of your relationship with Judaism growing up?
Sure. So my family attended temple fairly regularly when I was a child. I believe it was a Reformed temple. Both of my brothers were bar mitzvahed at the same temple. So during sort of my adolescence, we were there pretty frequently because I had two brothers that are 7 and 10 years older than me. So it was like back to back bar mitzvah preparation. But other than that, we were fairly secular. So we celebrated all the holidays, but Jewish culture was very much a part of our household, but like prayer and the actual religious aspect, we were fairly secular.
Did you have a bat mitzvah?
Not until I was 21. I did it when I went to Birthright Israel. So when I was a kid, my parents gave me the option. They felt that for their sons, it was important for them to go to Hebrew school and be bar mitzvah, you know, but in the 80s and 90s, the female side of that, I guess, wasn't as important. So they said, you can either go to Hebrew school or go to dancing school. And I was 7 or 8. So I definitely picked dancing school. So I didn't get that mitzvah. But when I did Birthright through my school's Hillel, I went to American University. I was given the opportunity to do a bat mitzvah and read a Torah portion while I was over there. And it was a really lovely experience. So I have been bat mitzvahed, but I was a grown up. I waited a long time to become a woman.
So kind of talking about that, what made you decide to do Birthright? Would you explain your experience with that? For those of you that don't know, Birthright is a free trip that you can take to Israel. I think it used to be like 18 to 26, and it's a curated trip through Israel, and you get to go with other people around your age and learn about Israel. What made you decide to do Birthright? What was that experience like, and why did you decide to have your bat mitzvah when you were over in Israel?
So I always felt bad that I never got a bat mitzvah. Like, it felt like a part of my heritage that I was lacking, since I had so many Jewish friends and everybody had a bar bat mitzvah, and I was one of the only ones who didn't. So I wanted to sort of be part of that touchstone, right, that every young Jewish person gets to experience, and I didn't. So it was important for me that at some point I get to do that. So they just asked if anybody hadn't been bar bat mitzvahed, and I said I hadn't. And they, like the leaders of the Birthright trip from the Hillel, asked if that was something we were interested in. And I said, yes, it's something I'm interested in. So it was a pretty easy process that way. I went on Birthright mostly, I had a lot of Jewish friends that had also been on Birthright. So the idea was in my head. So when I found out my school had a Hillel, I went and I kind of researched it, and they offered that trip too. So my sophomore year, I applied and was able to go.
What was that experience like? Walk me through exactly what you did on Birthright, what cities you visited, what the vibe was. Because I know that there's people who, I never did Birthright because every time I looked into it, I would book a show. So by the time, so I aged out, and now I feel like I'd want to go with my family. So we have to wait until my daughter's old enough.
So you can actually, though, there's trips for adults through Momentum.
Okay.
So depending on what your city is. So you can, as an adult, go the same free experience. I think it costs like a little bit depending, because you have to pay the organization that's sort of hosting it, but it's still fairly inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of go with other Jewish women around your age and bond that way.
Oh, that's interesting.
But for my experience, I'll do my best, because it's been like almost 20 years. I'll be 39 in January. So we did obviously Jerusalem, Tel Aviv. We went to a lot, Masada, we climbed. So we got to do all that. It was a 14-day trip. I found it to be an incredible experience, especially because I turned 21 there. So they had like a little party for me.
Oh, that's so fun.
So it's a really transformative experience. And it was really interesting because during that trip, I got the very Zionistic view of Israel. And that was really the only experience I had until I went back around, I was 30. And when I went back with, I was visiting Jordan. So I was in Amman. We crossed over through the Jordanian border, which was an entirely different experience. And the people I were with were all different versions of Christian. And so I was the only Jew. And so I got the Christian side of the Israeli history. So, you know, all the Jesus stuff. That was also absolutely fascinating, yeah. Right? Because when I went, they didn't do any of that because it was more like Jewish culture.
Yeah, of course.
But there's a value in sort of going just for the historical perspective of both sides. And so I got to experience a fully grounded sort of view of Israel. And when I went as like a tourist and not somebody on Birthright, I got to speak to a lot more of the locals and sort of hear their perspective on what it was like to live in Israel, and that a lot of them aren't, you know, Zionists. They don't love the government there. They're just like America. Like nobody.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
Could be better, right? So that was a really interesting experience for me. And I really fell in love with the Jewish state again on my second visit because I got to be so much more immersed in the actual culture of it than Birthright, which is very insulated from the rest of the country because it's very much we're taking you to these places. We have guards with us. You're on a tour and this is what the tour is. So it was both very different, but both very transformative trips.
I like that you got the two different perspectives of that. So my husband was supposed to go to Israel for a gig in March of 2020.
Bummer.
We both took a trip to Dublin to kind of break up the trip, and he obviously ended up not going to Israel. But one of the tours he was looking at was a three religions tour in Jerusalem where it looked at Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, and the different, I guess, tourist spots, you could say, for that. So I think a lot of people don't realize that there are other religions that have holy sites and stories in Israel, and that you're obviously not.
Islam's a big part, Jerusalem. And I got to go to that area as well. I forget what it's called, and I'm sorry my memory is so bad, but in Jerusalem, it's not like a downtown area, so I'm so wrong, but there's like different sections that are Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, and they're different like shopping districts. Hmm. And you can go to the different districts and get a different experience based on, I guess, what you're looking for, what the tourism is doing at the time. So I got to do that as well, and I found that really just a fascinating experience. And they're all very close to each other.
Where did you have your bat mitzvah when you were in Israel? Was it in a temple?
It was like a community center.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you have to do? Did you read from the Torah? Did you have an aliyah?
I read from the Torah. Don't ask me. It was gone like 10 minutes after I did it because it wasn't like I had practiced that Torah portion so intensely. I only got it like a couple of weeks before. So I read it. They also helped me a little bit because my Hebrew is not so great. But I read from the Torah.
Do you think that being an adult B'nai Mitzvah, the feeling I think was different? Do you think you got more out of the experience because you weren't 13 and you were now making this decision as an adult and it was, you know, a different process?
Yeah, it didn't feel as all-encompassing as it would as if I had been going to Hebrew school since I was 8 years old through 13 and did all of that. So it was kind of easier. It was very much a ceremonial thing. But I enjoyed it, and I didn't feel like I had missed out on everything that everybody else did from 8 to 13 because I had a sweet 16. Mm-hmm. That was like the giveaway. My brothers have bar mitzvahs. I got a sweet 16. So it was literally like I got the same party that I would have. So I didn't feel like I was missing any element of it. I sort of got the whole package just broken up.
So you have a young daughter.
I do.
How old is she?
She just turned 4, September 23rd.
Oh, that's so cool. How has having a daughter changed your relationship with Judaism, if at all?
So I had always known that I wanted to raise whatever child I had Jewish. It was like very important to me. And I'm my mom and my dad are Jewish, and my grandparents, we're Ashkenaz Jews 150%. To the point, I did Ancestry.com. And I was like, my friend gave it to me as a gift. And I was like, this seems, I know where I'm from.
The 23andMe.
Yeah, but this was Ancestry specifically. And I was like, I pretty much know where we're from, but sure, let's do it. And it said I was 97% European Jew. And I said, that tracks. And then I got an email 6 months later that said, your results have been updated. And I said, oh, cool, what's new? And it said I was 100% European. Like, there's no doubt how Jewish I am. Very, like we are Eastern, Western European Jews.
So the 3% was kind of, they had to confirm the 3% just to make sure. I feel like you very
no doubt you are a Jew.
You know, that is why I have never bothered to do that, because I think it would, I wouldn't even have to wait the couple of months. It would just immediately come back as 100% because my family's literally like Fiddler on the Roof. Like, I had a great grandfather who was a tailor from Russia, and it would not, I think everyone had like a great grandfather who was a tailor from Russia.
So I'm Russian, Polish, and a Hungarian. Are you pretty much the same?
So
we can be related.
So there's a couple different places. On my mom's side of the family, we have actual paperwork from Ellis Island from my great-grandmother that says Russia, but her father's paperwork, which was a few years earlier, says Poland, and it's the same town. So it kind of was like that shifting border.
Yeah.
And then when my husband and I were at Auschwitz 5 years ago, we found my maiden name in the book of victims, and it said Ukraine. So maybe my father's family is from the Ukraine, but of course at the time it was Russia. So it's all that, like, it's now Russia, Ukraine, Poland area. I had a great grandmother who was apparently Hungarian, but it, you know, very similar to you.
I had that Lithuanian in there too. That was like that's shifting border again. So it becomes like a little bit. So I want to go to Auschwitz and visit. It's such a call that I have. But at this stage, I'm almost going to wait until my daughter's old enough to be able to go, because I really want her to take her, but I'm not taking her at 4 years old.
No,
I'm not going twice. I feel like I don't need to go to Auschwitz more than like the one time. That seems like a brutal experience.
You know, I want to take my mother, and my husband really liked Krakow. He's like, so I'll go with you to Krakow, but I'm not going back to Auschwitz. I feel like that was a once in a lifetime thing for me. You should go. What we did is we visited Krakow, and we got a really great independent guide, and we had to wake up at like 6 a.m. because it's a bit of a drive and you want to get there early. And we got an independent guide who drove us, and she was really great. She talked about growing up in communist Poland, because she was, you know, talking about like getting jeans as a teenager and it being a big deal. And the jeans kept getting shorter as she grew, because she wanted to save them. And the way it works is the museum part, which is in the main part of Auschwitz, is a guided tour with headsets with one of their museum educators. And then if you want to visit Birkenau, that's when we utilized the independent guide, and we walked around and she gave us a lot of anecdotal information. It was really informative. And I think it's so important. And I mean, not a lot of people visit Poland in general, and I am a huge advocate for visiting Poland. I think it's a beautiful country.
Yeah,
and it has a lot of really interesting history. So I love that you're wanting to go and to take your daughter as well, because I think it's, as you know, the generations of survivors are dying off, so important to educate.
Yeah.
I'm a huge advocate for Holocaust education. I'm thinking of going back to school to major in that.
Doesn't almost feel now, it's been so long, that people they're becoming desensitized to how horrific it was, because everything is horrific now.
And also I think that the idea of people not realizing, you know, that 6 million Jews died, that it was such a detrimental thing to our population.
It's a huge number of people.
We've never recovered population wise from the Holocaust at all. You know, it is really important to go. So if you're listening and you're interested in going to Auschwitz, you can definitely DM me on Instagram, and I would love to talk about my experience with you if you're curious about what that's like. We also visited Dachau on that trip, which was a very different concentration camp experience, because Auschwitz was almost immediately turned into a museum, where Dachau was turned into a refugee camp for quite a bit of time. So the layout and the buildings changed, so it was very, very different. And even the different types of tours we took were different. I think we're probably going to do an episode on that trip to Europe in general, because we were there for 3 weeks. It was very World War II.
Wow.
But Dachau was a very different experience than Auschwitz. Important in a different way.
I have a weird question.
Yeah.
When you went, was the energy there just weird? Did you like feel it?
Okay, this is going to sound very surprising, but Auschwitz one was very, there were a lot of artifacts and, you know, we're having someone kind of talking in our head. So it was very, very heavy. But when we went to Birkenau, I think the thing that was the most surprising was how peaceful it was.
Interesting.
I'd like to think that the souls of the people, you know, I'm a big believer in energies, were more at peace than I think that you'd think they would be. But my husband always talks about how we talk about people thinking they were going to take a shower and why would they think this? You know, but if you think back, these people in these terrible ghettos and they're dirty and they're starving and then they get on a train ride that's horrific. And then they're now in the middle of the woods and there's beautiful trees and someone's saying, you're going to take a shower. You know, I could, being there, we were like, you know, I can understand why people would have believed that. Also, the crematoriums are no longer there. They were blown up during the Sonderkommando uprising, which is something super interesting if you want to look into. There's actually a book I bought there about the Sonderkommando, which are the prisoners who ran the gas chambers and the crematorium. It's a very heavy book. It's very dry. It's all interviews.
That's torture in its own right. It's like a different kind of torture.
Yeah. But if anyone again interested in Holocaust history, you should look up the Sonderkommando at Auschwitz and the uprising. But it was very peaceful. It was definitely not the energy I would have thought it was, which I felt was a little comforting to me because I've definitely been to places where bad things have happened and you feel really like jarred and it's really uncomfortable and you can almost like feel the sorrow. But where all these people died, I didn't really feel any of that. It was definitely a different feeling than in the other part of the camp.
Yeah. All right. Interesting.
There's my Holocaust.
I feel like, what was the original question you asked me, though? We tangented it a little bit. Did I answer it?
We were talking about your bat mitzvah and ended up talking about Auschwitz, which is something that happens in my life on a regular basis. Like I said, I'm really a huge advocate for Holocaust education. So I feel like I talk about it a lot on Facebook and I post a lot of pictures about that kind of stuff. So I'm definitely.
My daughter.
Yes, your daughter. Yes, your daughter's sports.
I had always wanted to raise my kids Jewish, and my husband is like a quarter Jewish. So his dad's mother was a European Jew and his dad was an immigrant from China.
Oh, wow.
So my husband's a quarter Chinese, a quarter Jewish, and then half just like generic, like English white.
Okay.
But he was very game for raising our daughter Jewish, and I told him it was important. He even wanted to convert, but I said, like, you don't really have to do that because, like, I don't need you to be a better Jew than I – like, you can if you want to, but I'm not going to – it wasn't important to me for him to do that. So she's Jewish. She knows she's Jewish. I talked to her about it. We do celebrate Christmas and, like, Easter. We don't go to church, obviously, but – I mean, like, she can have Santa. Like, I'm not getting so emotionally attached to those kind of things. And we celebrate, you know, Rosh Hashanah and, you know, Hanukkah and all of those things. But she's going to go to Hebrew school and she's going to have, like, the full experience that I didn't.
I like that you've learned from your own experience and that's kind of shaped how you want to raise your daughter. I feel like even me, who did have I went to Hebrew school from like the age of 2 to like 16. It was even past where a lot of Judaism. I think that's also kind of shaped how I want to raise my daughter. For example, I didn't go to Jewish day school. I went to a secular private school. She's going to Jewish day school because one of the things I think we talk about a lot is that I studied Judaism for so long and I'm not fluent in Hebrew. So it's one of the things that we want to make sure that she is. So I love that you've decided that there was something that you maybe would have wanted to do for yourself that you're doing for your daughter. So I want to jump in and talk about your company. You are one of the founders of a social network for moms called Six Cool Moms. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to start this company and exactly what Six Cool Moms does?
Sure. So Six Cool Moms is a national network of social groups for moms. I founded it in March of 2020, 2 weeks before the pandemic, with the express purpose
Great timing.
Of being, yeah, it was good timing. Actually, well, I'll say that it was. The express purpose of our organization was to do like in-person events to bring moms together, right? Because motherhood's a really isolating experience, if you're a mom.
Yes.
So when I found out I was pregnant, I worked as a political account executive. So I handled for a television station, all the political like candidate and advocacy media that came through the station. I had no intention of leaving that job. It was a niche job. It was in DC. I was kind of in the perfect area for it. And I really, really liked it. When I was about 6 months pregnant, I realized that most of my close friends lived in Northern Virginia and I lived in Montgomery County, Maryland. And if you know this area, I don't know why people like can't handle like the DC as the separator. It's like, too far.
So it's okay. I heard something that we were watching an Instagram video that says if you have to make more than one transfer on the train in New York, it's a long distance relationship. So this is even within the same city. I totally get the different states, even though they're close.
30 minutes is too far. When you're single, that's not like a big deal. You pop over for brunch, whatever. But with a kid, I was like, I really want a support system of moms that are closer to where I live. So I say that I do what any basic suburban woman does. And I joined a bunch of moms Facebook groups and I went into full panic mode. I was like, oh no. So what happens? Like you have a kid and you become this weird mom bee where all you do is talk about like organic baby food and then like judge other people for how they parent their kids. And it wasn't a vibe that I liked at all. I was like, oh no,
this is not what I want.
I very much knew. And again, I had my daughter, I was 34, about to be 35. So I like had a whole life, you know, I was very set in who I was and I wanted to keep my own interests and hobbies and my own personality, you know, intact. I didn't want to just become Poppy's mom. I wanted to be Jenna Lou and I have a daughter and her name is Poppy, but I am my own person outside of being somebody's mother.
I completely understand that. I feel like maybe a lot of mothers in our mother's generation, they didn't necessarily work. Their whole life was their children. They volunteered with the PTA. Mm-hmm. You know, they were mom. And then when their kids leave the house, they now don't really have anything. And I definitely know that knew going into becoming a mother, that's not what I wanted.
Yeah.
Though I feel like you automatically become so-and-so's mom to people. Yeah. You can't inevitably. But I definitely understand the idea of wanting to be, you know, involved with the things that you were passionate about before you were a mother, because you don't want to, you can easily lose yourself in mom.
150%. So I started my own group with the express purpose of it being a non-judgmental space for moms to sort of get together and make real life friends. And it wasn't a business in any way, shape, or form. It was just a mom's Facebook group. But I noticed that we started growing over time. And after I had my daughter and I started to talk with like honesty and authenticity about the struggles of motherhood, we started to grow and people really liked it. And at some point, people were asking about advertising and I did it for free for a while because I had an advertising job and I didn't like conflict of interest and whatever. And I really just didn't have any intention of doing anything with it. But so many people were asking that I started to charge a little bit because creating copy is time consuming and people paid. So I started to charge a little bit more and they still paid. And I had this light bulb moment where I thought, well, one group is one thing, but if I had a whole network of these groups, that's national advertising. And I think I could really make this a profitable concept. So I reached out to a couple of friends I had in different cities across the country. And I said, hey, do you want to start this group? And I'll pay you like a portion of the advertising. And I launched my LLC in March of 2020. I had like 6 groups, including the one that I originally started. And then the pandemic hit and blew up faster than I thought that we were going to, because moms were home and they were freaking out and they had no outlet. And so they came to us in droves. So we went from 5 to 10 to 20. And we have, I think, like 38 active chapters currently right now.
Is that in different cities or?
Yeah, we're in 18 states. So everyone's in a different geographic location. So we have like all of New Jersey, most of Maryland, except the Eastern Shore. We have some in California, some in Texas, Florida. We just opened one in South Carolina. So we're definitely all over the country. Everyone who runs the group, I call them a market director. So they act as a local influencer in their community. And that's really where the beauty of the advertising comes in, because we created an entirely new, I consider it a new form of influencer marketing. Because if you look at something like an Instagram or like a TikTok or a LinkedIn, it's very much a me, look at me. Look at how great I am. Look at what I'm doing. But on Facebook, it's more of a we in these group settings. Look at what we're doing. Don't you want to be a part of what we're doing? Look at who we're going to. So it's led by somebody who acts as an influencer. But the goal of that influencer is to get the whole community involved, especially to support the local businesses. And so our mission is to elevate motherhood to the 21st century, because we're just not there yet. So we're really trying to give women back their voices and let them know that it's okay to want to do your own thing and go out and have fun outside of your kids and keep up your own hobby. So we're really designed for women who love their kids, because we all love our kids.
Of course.
Want to have their own interests and hobbies and activities outside of their children as well, and have their own individuality with that. So we do that in a lot of different ways. We do monthly events, and every group is a little bit different in how they do those. But the goal is to get moms connected outside of the Facebook groups, to then bring those relationships back to these online communities so they can build from there. And people really develop real friendships doing that. We also, people who run my chapters, they actually license the name from me. So they're licensing the Six Cool Moms brand, and we help them and we train them. But it's their own little business, right? They sell their advertising. They get to keep the majority of that advertising. And we teach them the different tips and tricks for how to be.
It's like a franchise almost.
It's a franchise, but it's not. It's like it's just difference in the contracting. Like a franchise is a whole thing. A license is a little bit different. They're licensing the Six Cool Moms name, but they're not. We're not brick and mortar, so they're not starting a location.
What kind of events would I expect to do if I signed up for a local chapter to be a part of Six Cool Moms?
Sure. So we do our very typical, like, mom's night out. You go to a restaurant and go to dinner. We've done axe throwing. I have a monthly yoga and wine. I do a monthly business networking event for moms. I'm doing an event called Spirits with Spirits, which is like craft cocktails and a group mediumship with some like private medium lessons. I've done tarot readings. I've done retreats that are like for women's empowerment. I've done a yoga retreat that I did with a partner, Great Seneca Yoga. We did that in Mexico. What else? I do so much stuff. This weekend I have something called Self-Love Saturday. So I got five vendors together to offer like discounted services from what they normally offer. So acupuncture, Reiki, Botox and fillers, and then dry needling. And so people can come into our host office and try one of these providers at a discounted rate and then hopefully come back to see them later. I do two large-scale vendor markets every year, which is just like all like local crafters and local artisans coming together for winter and Mother's Day to sell their wares. So we do kind of like a lot.
Yeah, a lot. So it seems like there's something, regardless of what your interest is, which I think is really great.
We try, right? And the thing, what I get sometimes, which is interesting, is people like yoga and wine, people worry, they're like, I don't drink, can I still come? I don't drink. We have wine there, but nobody's like, yo, you got to hit this funnel, right?
Because
we're adults. So we do try to do a couple of different things because I really like yoga and aerial yoga. I personally do a lot of those type of events to draw in audiences. And because for my market and I plan most of the events, I like to do things that I like to do. So I do try to appeal to everybody, but there are certain things that I'm like never going to plan because it's just not my vibe. And if I have to host it, I'm not into it.
I love that you're utilizing local businesses as well, because I feel like, you know, the death of the mom and pop store, small businesses is a real problem nowadays. And being a small business owner, I appreciate that you're utilizing people locally who maybe are moms themselves. Maybe it's a family business. I think that that's so lovely that you're doing that for these people.
Well, too, a lot of advertising in these Facebook groups is so important for so many local businesses. Getting recommended in these groups can like make or break certain businesses, but nobody lets them advertise, right? They have maybe a monthly business post, or you can like maybe tag yourself in the comments, but they admins don't even like that. So it's really hard as a business to promote yourself in these groups because they think advertising is so dirty because people abuse it and they act like,
yeah, I've seen that in Facebook groups I'm involved
with. They ruin the group and they ruin the engagement of the group when they do that. So what we do is we incorporate it into the content itself so that when people see the advertising, they want to support those businesses because those businesses are supporting Six Cool Moms. And we create enough content to compensate for the advertising so people just don't feel like they're being sold to constantly. So there's like an art form to it. We also teach them how to write copy that doesn't feel so salesy that it turns people off. So we are one of the only business-friendly sort of Facebook organizations that you can work with. And we really want businesses to succeed. So we kind of like go the extra mile. We have this program that I launched last year called Six Cool Moms Approved. And so businesses will pay a yearly membership fee. They get listed on our website. They get two posts a year that they write, and we'll show them how to write it. But the biggest thing is that for anybody who asks a recommendation for, like, let's say you want a house cleaner, I'll go through and say such and such is a Six Cool Moms Approved house cleaner, and they offer our members 10% off. It's probably the biggest value of what that is. And you're having me, somebody that they trust, say that this is a recommended business. So it hits a little bit differently than just like a stranger giving a recommendation.
I love that you specifically bring up the house cleaner, because I'm in an Upper West Side moms group. And I feel like anytime anyone asks, they're inundated with people who are that. And what people really even will say in the post is looking for recommendations only. And people completely ignore that.
Oh, yeah. They don't care.
Which, you know, you got to hustle, but I definitely like that you're recommended or approved vendors. I think it does bring a lot more validity to that.
They support us. We're going to support them.
Why do you think that these Facebook groups for moms have kind of blown up? Do you think it's because of the pandemic and people were just kind of looking for a community? Do you think it's because a lot of people are utilizing social media? Why do you think they become so important to being a mom in the 21st century?
Yeah, it's really interesting, but that's the truth. Specifically the Facebook moms groups, like it's a whole thing. I'm definitely not the first person to monetize it. I don't think anybody's monetized it quite the way I have, but I imagine that it'll happen in the future. I think people are looking for community, that it takes a village, and that's part of like our tagline. Like, it takes a village to raise a child, but modern moms are lacking their tribe. And part of that is we're in a very secular world. People don't really talk to their neighbors anymore. It's depending on where you grew up. You have your friends. You're not looking for new friends. So if somebody moves in, it's very isolating. So these are really a great place to be a part of your community and find out what's going on and have relevant recommendations and a relevant place to go to ask specific questions for your geographic location and your specific parenting issue. So I think that's part of it. For us specifically too, it's not just a resource listicle like you would see. We provide a lot of content. So we're telling stories, we're sharing memes, we're acting as the leader of the group to drive the engagement and drive the conversation. So it's more like a media company, right? Because you're coming to look exactly what we're doing, to see what we're posting, to be sort of a part of that environment. And yeah, you can get your question answered, but that might not be necessarily what you're coming to us for. You might just be coming for entertainment and to see what events are going on and to make mom friends. So we're doing things a little bit differently in that respect. And I think people want to laugh, and we make them laugh, right? We're talking about sex in a way that other moms groups are never going to do. We have like an after dark group that was like our fastest growing group. And I'm blown away by how dirty minded so many of our members are. It's amazing.
We're going to touch on this in a second.
People want to laugh. They want to see a penis meme, and they want to laugh at it. And they don't want to feel like, just because I have a kid, that I'm not allowed to laugh at that kind of humor anymore. And I have to be like a boring adult, right? Like, we kind of are trying to turn that notion on its head and be like, I'm a person before I'm somebody's parent.
I want to hear a little bit more about this after dark aspect, because I think that is really a thing that when you become a mother, people, I guess, stereotypically, you're supposed to act a certain way. Like you said, you can't laugh at certain jokes. You're not supposed to talk about certain things. You're supposed to. People want you to act like you didn't have to have sex to have a child.
It's so crazy. When I see a pregnant person, I'm like, nobody's going to acknowledge the fact that like that person had sex to get that baby.
I saw something on the internet about a baby shower, a really weird concept. They throw a party because you had sex and your mom's there.
Yeah, right. It is.
Which literally, unless you're using a surrogate or you were using something like IVF, you literally had sex and they're throwing a party because you had sex and then your mom's celebrating that you had sex.
Mazel. So it's
sometimes, you know, even before that, asking you, you know, how, you know, are you having sex? Like, you know, we don't think about how procreation is sexual and sexy. And we just, you know,
when people ask, are you trying for a baby? It's like,
literally, they're asking if you're having sex.
Yeah, I'm practicing. Like, I don't know. It's none of your business. But no, I don't care. But so, yeah, Yeah, so that's, we're trying to like sort of change that notion. And a lot of people, more so than you would even think, have alternative lifestyles that they don't feel comfortable talking to their friends and family about. But we now provided this safe space where they can ask, is anybody else into like the swinger lifestyle or the throw, like whatever it is. And so you have all these alternative lifestyles and people coming through and asking questions and doing meetups and developing their own friendships and relationships with moms who have similar interests to them and not being judged for it. And there's something really powerful about that.
I love the fact that it's not judgmental, because I feel like so much about being a mother, you are judged. I didn't breastfeed because I was taking medication that wouldn't have allowed me to. And I was in a new moms group through the local JCC and everybody was breastfeeding. So I felt, it's not like they were actively judging me, but I felt kind of other than. And I, you know, and then even people on the street, you know, it's the Upper West Side, will kind of stop you sometimes to say things. Like my daughter didn't want to stand next to me at the grocery store and someone was like, you have your hands full. And I was like, she's not doing anything wrong. Like, don't even, you know, judging even my child and how she's acting like a normal toddler. I feel like being a parent, it's so, you're so judged.
God forbid. This is how I knew like I had done a good job with my personal community, is that I feel okay posting a picture of my kid in a car seat. Like, you can't do that very many places.
Oh, I know. Everybody's talking about where the clip is, which is important. And I definitely learned from people posting that where the clip is supposed to be and that you're not supposed to have a jacket. But I feel like...
calm down. We know all the rules. But yeah, it's one of those things. Once I posted it, nobody said anything. I was like, okay, I did a good job. But I posted in other people's groups and people have been like, boo the strap, whatever.
So people are very brave behind a keyboard.
They're like, you're very brave for posting a picture of your kid in a car seat. Yeah. So even still, we deal with a lot of judgment, because people, the way I view it, everybody takes in every piece of information that they receive in the world and it gets filtered through their lens of personal experience. And your experience is probably entirely different than my experience. So something may trigger you in a way that creates like an emotion or a reaction that doesn't trigger me in the same way. And it can almost be like, wow, like jarring. Like, oh, I didn't mean to like offend anybody with what I'm saying. But once you sort of make that connection where it's like, it's not about me or what I'm posting or what I'm saying, it's about their own personal experiences, it's easy to take, you don't take things as personally, because it's not personal.
I take things very, I think I take everything personally, which is my problem. So
my job is entirely on social media. Like, I would have been a puddle of tears and just like judgment if I let everything everybody said like impact me. Cause I've gotten it's social media. People get banana. They can be bananas.
Yeah.
And I could say something that they are so triggered by that then they go and post on their personal page talking about how, you know, I'm this, that, and the other thing. It's just, people can be bananas. So I just like let it wash over me. You know, if it doesn't impact my bank account, then I don't really need to pay it any attention. And that was one of the first things I learned about having a job almost entirely on social media, is that you just can't let that stuff impact your day to day, or it'll eat you alive.
That's good advice.
Stop being a mess on the internet. Like, don't take it so seriously on the internet. Stop fighting.
I know. I mean, we were all perfect parents before we were parents, is something to remember. I feel like I said things that I'd never do this. And I'm like, here, watch Miss Rachel.
Literally, you know? I knew. Well, I didn't breastfeed either, and I just didn't want to, because nobody in my family breastfed. It wasn't something I was interested in, and I set myself up, because I had prepartum depression, so I set myself up knowing that I might have postpartum depression to make my motherhood journey as easy as possible. So I hired like a night nanny. And so I did a group similar to the JCC, and everybody's breastfeeding and everybody's like not sleeping. And they're like wearing their war wounds of like being a mother. I like am sleeping 8 hours a night. And like, I don't, you know what I mean? So I just tried to set myself up a little bit differently. At the end of the day, like, it doesn't, like, breastfeeding, not breastfeeding, it doesn't really impact like how your child bonds to you or any of that. So I feel like people are just, there's a lot of pressure to do these things. And I don't get that pressure, because it's not coming from science or medicine. It's coming from a place of treating women like we're still 1950s housewives, where we're supposed to listen to everything our doctors say and what society says, but then also have full-time jobs and look 25 and get your stomach back immediately. It's like all of the garbage of the 50s now wrapped up in like modern feminism, because now you have to do literally everything. There is no space. There is no break. And if you don't do it perfectly, you get ripped apart on the internet for not, like, you know what I mean? It's just, it's so unfair, and I'm like done with it. So I'm trying to really, like, again, elevate motherhood to the 21st century, because we deserve, like, give us a friggin' break. Right?
Even within ourselves, sometimes, you know, like, my house has been a mess this week, but it's, we've been doing a lot of podcast stuff. We've been doing a lot of work stuff, you know, and I've been keeping a 2.5-year-old alive.
Yeah,
so
hard.
I think even we're hard on ourselves sometimes. I was like, I look really tired today. And someone asked me how I was at drop off. And I was like, I'm tired. Like, it's okay to admit I'm tired. And, you know, you don't have to be perfect all the time and
roll in
kind of looking terrible on the occasion. So where does the name Six Cool Moms come from?
Sure. So my company name is actually Cool Moms LLC. I wanted to trademark the name because I saw the value of being an online company. I saw the value in having a densely created IP and all that comes with. So when I hired an IP lawyer, essentially, to get me my trademark, she's like, well, you can't trademark Cool Moms because they're too generic words. And I said, yeah, that makes sense. I was like, okay, so I need to put like a unique modifier in front of it. And she said, yeah, and I should cut up these names. Nothing was like sticking for me, but there were six of us who came to the first meetup. So I said, what about Six Cool Moms? And she said, you can't do that either because six is a generic word. And I was like, okay, well, what if I throw an extra X on it? And she says, that'll work. And I got my trademark in like 4 or 5 months. It was like an easy process. So honestly, Six Cool Moms, there were six of us at the first meetup. I used to say, because I was trying to be cutesy, that the extra X was like a secret between the six of us. But the secret is I needed a trademark. And so this was the best way to get a trademark. But I branded really heavily. And it's like, I like the name of my company like a lot. I think it's a cute brand. But that's the story behind it.
I still really like that. That's a very fun story. So what advice would you give to new mothers who are choosing to continue to work, but they also still want to be very involved with the upbringing of their children?
Oof, it's tough.
It's a very loaded question, I know.
It is a loaded question. So in my heart of hearts, corporate America is not designed for motherhood or parenthood as a general statement.
It's not.
And it used to be okay with dads, right? They were 9 to 5 and, you know, leave it up to the moms. But now it's almost like the same thing, but now the moms are the ones who have to figure out what to do with their 9 to 5 jobs while taking care of their kids. So it's just, I left my corporate job to do Six Cool Moms full time because it was too much work, and it was a pandemic, and my corporate job, I literally, my maternity leave ended in January of 2020. I came back to the office for a couple of weeks and I asked them, my hours were 8:30 to 5:30. And I asked for 9 to 5 hours because the 8:30 to 5:30, I couldn't drop my kid off at daycare or pick her up. Like it was just too, and I asked for 9 to 5 hours. I'm like, I'll eat lunch at my desk. And I was in political advertising sales. So it's not like I really needed to have my butt in the seat. But my manager at the time, who was like a, you know, 55 plus cis white male with a wife who was stayed at home, said, no, we're not going to give you those hours, but I don't think that's your problem. Now that you have a family, it's time to think about your career, your future, and what that looks like.
Oh.
And that went right into my ear and hit this part in my brain where I said, did this mofo just like say that to my face? And would he say that to a man? And in my head, I was like, I got to get out of here. I'm like, I can't do this. Then the pandemic happened and everyone got to work from home and did fine. So it was just like, they have this control thing. So I would say like, try to get out of corporate America or find some place that's really flexible. Like you really need remote work hours. You need a flexible schedule. You need to work for an employer who's going to understand that sometimes your kids are going to get sick and you're going to have to work from home, and it shouldn't be a big deal. And you shouldn't make it stressful for parents to try to figure that stuff out.
Do you think that your life is easier now that you own your own company and work from home?
Girl, no.
I don't either. No, I completely.
I thought that it would be. And listen, I'm living like a dream, right? I get to create every day. It's totally mine, right? I get to support other women in business. I get to do all these things that I absolutely love doing. But it's still, I still have to pay my bills. So I have to look at the numbers at the end of the month. I have to, I stress out about advertising sales to see that we're hitting our quotas. Because if we don't, I still have to pay payroll and I don't get to pay myself, right? Like,
yep.
So there's You're all the of last those person things to get where, paid. Yeah. So I love it. Absolutely love it. But I'm working 100 hours a week. I haven't had a day off in three years. I'm working so hard and making so much less money than I was making in corporate America. But I'm working to build something bigger. And I've been doing this 3 years. And so it takes some time. But I like the trajectory that we're going in. And so I'm just trying to stay the course. But yes, in some ways, so much better, right? Because I can end this podcast and like, go dick off the rest of the day. And like, nobody's going to tell me not to, right? The only person that hurts is me. But there's so much more pressure on me for everything else. And also, if you own a business, which you do, it's so much more expensive than you think it's going to be. I feel like so much of my profit goes to the government.
There's, you know, our disability, and it's the,
what, you want me to talk?
Yeah, which insurance is it?
It's the it's workman's
comp. Workman's comp. So workman's comp.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So much money. It's every month they're like, you owe this much money. And then I thought, I think I've paid off for the year. And they're like, oh no, it started again. And we just get these lovely little, you know, letters from the government saying, please give us money for something you're probably never going to use. The first time we got a letter about that, I thought we were being audited by the IRS, and I started crying. And I called our CPA, and they're like, no, this is about insurance.
Yeah.
It was so scary.
I know.
But we always like to say that we traded a 9-to-5 for a 24/7. You know, that's yes. That's what we've done. It becomes your whole life. Like, it's all we talk about. It's constantly what you're thinking about. But at the same time, you're right. Like, I get to go and do stuff with my daughter, and we don't have to have a nanny or childcare. We, you know, are
She's
able
sick,
to
kinda, I go get her.
Yeah, it's nice, but also it's all on you. And like you said, you're the last person you pay. So sometimes that doesn't happen,
uh-huh.
Which, you know, it comes with the territory. So speaking about social media, anyone who takes a look at your Instagram can tell that you love Halloween. Is this your favorite holiday? And what are some of the Halloween traditions that your family has?
Okay. Yeah, it is my favorite holiday. This was a really fun year. I got to do like a bunch of photo shoots, and it was really, I'm very lucky that I surround myself with so many creative people that like allow me to do sort of crazy stuff. So Poppy's only 4. So we haven't really, and we kind of, the first 2 years were COVID.
Yeah. There was
COVID Halloween, and she didn't really remember. So we decorate every year. We do the trick or treating. I think moving forward, I want to start doing like a little bit more traditional stuff with Poppy besides just the pumpkins. But we're still trying to figure that out since she's so young.
I love Halloween as well. We always do like a family costume. And this year we trick or treated in the neighborhood, and there's apparently whole blocks will close off. Like the associations will just close off the street.
Like a party.
And it becomes like every house, which is a lot of brownstones, will crazy decorate.
Nice.
And there were literally hundreds of children. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. But my daughter was very excited, and she'd go get something, and then she'd come running back to me and she'd go, Mama, treat. Like every single house. So I think she's starting to figure out what trick-or-treating is. And we watched some,
it.
You know, Disney Junior Halloween stuff, and she liked that. So I can't wait till, like you said, you know, she gets older and starts to understand a little bit more, and we can do fun stuff. So I know one year, I love theme parties, and I know one year you had a Nicolas Cage themed birthday party, and I want the details on this because this is a very specific theme party. And I know there's also a story relating to your daughter with this as well.
Oh yeah. So I, every year for my birthday, I try to do a theme of some form. So I've done interesting ones in the past, not last year, but the year before, I did like a birthday roast. So I had like a comedian like host like a roast of me, which was really fun. I've done like adult sleepovers. I've done a pie fight birthday party, which is probably one of my favorites, where I got all my friends together to like pie each other in the face. Great. So much fun. So the Nicolas Cage, it just kind of like came to my head. I was like, going to a Nicolas Cage themed birthday party. So we got a Nicolas Cage cake and a giant Nicolas Cage cutout. We had everybody come dressed as like Nicolas Cage characters. I was pregnant at the time that we threw that party, but nobody knew because I was like maybe like 5 seconds pregnant. Like it was a week before I even missed my period. So it was just kind of a little bit bananas. But so she was there, just like nobody knew that she was there. I love that party. It was really fun. The cake was amazing. It just had a giant Nicolas Cage face on it.
My husband's saying he would come as John Travolta in Face Off to the Nicolas Cage theme party.
Solid.
Which is a solid choice. You know, I saw that movie. I was in a dancer with the band when I was in high school, and we used to go on this big trip and we went to San Diego, and a bunch of us watched that movie in a hotel room.
Great movie.
So we were talking about 90s movies a couple weeks ago, and my husband was like, he's like, what is this movie about? I was like, they literally change faces. And he's like, when did you watch this movie? This does not sound like a movie that you would want to watch. And I was like, I was in high school and it was a band thing.
To be honest with you, there's one line in that movie and John Travolta saying that. It's like John Travolta, but he is Nick Cage, yeah. Right? And he tells John Travolta's daughter, dress like Halloween and ghouls will try to get in your pants. And I'm like, just like hearing John Travolta say it, like still upsets me to my core. Gross.
That does not sound like something I'd want to hear from John Travolta. I don't remember that, but that sounds kind of creepy. You post a lot of really amazing boudoir pictures on your Instagram. This is something I've always kind of secretly wanted to do.
Do it!
I want to. Do you have any advice for somebody who's maybe a little bit shy or possibly uncomfortable, but has maybe kind of secretly wanted to do this for their partner or just for themselves?
Sure. So, I think the first thing to realize is that nobody's going to have those pictures but you. So you don't have to share those pictures if you don't want to. But so many of these photographers, they specifically work with moms and women who may be a little bit insecure. So they do such a great job of like empowering you and making you feel beautiful. And it comes with hair and makeup and they pose you in the most flattering light. So you have to do it. It's so fun. So fun. And it's not as scary as you think. They definitely won't make you comfortable. And they usually give like champagne and stuff. So you like,
so you relax. Loosen up a little bit. That's so fun. I want to do it. I just feel like I look a little haggard and tired. The idea of like even glamming up right now sounds exhausting. So this last portion, we call this the rip-up of the Actors Studio, where we just ask some short form questions. So they don't need to be long answers. So what is your favorite Yiddish word?
Verklempt.
Verklempt. Okay. What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Rosh Hashanah.
If you were to have a bat mitzvah today, what would the theme of the party be?
Nicolas Cage.
I would want to attend, so I'm expecting an invite if you do another bat mitzvah. What profession other than your own would you want to attempt?
Ooh. I'd love to be a doctor.
That would also be my answer. I feel like I always love going to the doctor, which is weird.
I love getting shots. I'm like really messed up.
I like to talk medicine with people.
Mm-hmm. Same.
If heaven is real and God is there to welcome you, what would you like to hear them say?
Thanks for making me laugh.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Sure. Yeah. If you're interested in joining one of our communities, you can visit Six with two X's, S-I-X-X, coolmoms.com. Find our chapter directory and see what local chapter is in your area. We'd love to have you join us. And also follow me, Jenna Levine Liu, on Instagram and Facebook. And I believe it's founder Jenna Levine Liu on TikTok, but I'm there begrudgingly because I don't like it that much. I'm too old for it. People just don't like my stuff.
So thanks so much for joining us, Jenna. And
thanks for having me.
This sounds good too. Please look into Six Cool Moms. I think this is a really great company that is clearly very female focused. Like what you just heard, subscribe, and you can make sure that you don't miss any of our episodes. You can check out our Patreon, where you'll have access to special episodes and offers. And I'm also on Instagram @SheBrewInTheCity if you want to follow along with my everyday life.